Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A little later, we'll pay a special tribute on this, the eve of our nation's birthday. But first, one of the hottest authors in the country today is Curtis Sittenfeld. Her bestsellers, Prep, The Man of My Dreams, and American Wife, have been published in 25 languages. Her number of books sold is approaching 2 million and may top that with her latest, Sisterland. It will be of special interest to readers here because it is set here in St. Louis. Sisterland revolves around the threat of a possible devastating earthquake, an earthquake foreseen by two psychic sisters who are identical twins. It's just recently been published and is getting a lot of attention around the country, and we're happy to welcome Curtis Sittenfeld to our studio. Thanks so much, Curtis.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I imagine with the name Curtis, a lot of people were expecting a somewhat
a deeper voice.
We'd better explain that it's actually a middle name, right?
It's a middle. I'm the seventh or eighth Elizabeth Curtis, including my mother, my great aunt, my cousin. And so when I was born, my parents decided to distinguish me by calling me Curtis, which no one who knows me calls me anything besides Curtis, but it does create great confusion.
A little bit. Well, it also gives people something to talk about, and I'm sure you like that in as much as you're just published a great book and want people to talk about it.
Yeah, well, of course, I would like to. You know, sometimes I have been complimented, if this is a compliment, where people will say, I mean, this would be not having met me, but writing something online or saying he had so much insight into the female psyche. And then I'll think, well, you know, there is a reason for that. But
I want to talk, obviously, about the book. But before we get into that and some of the details of it, I'd like to talk about the Curtis, the transplant. You've gotten a lot of attention with an op-ed piece you did in the New York Times talking about adjusting to life in St. Louis. Tell us a little bit about that and what the adjustment was like.
Well, my husband would joke that we were self-hating Midwesterners because I'm from Ohio, he's from Indiana, and especially I'm from Cincinnati, which I think is very similar in a lot of ways to St. Louis. We moved here in 2007. And I think we were not crazy about it at first. It took us about 18 months. Now it's been 6 years. We are crazy about it. We love it here. But I think that even when we felt critical of St. Louis, it was for relatively trivial reasons. And I think that our criticisms had this, I guess, self-mocking quality where we knew that in a lot of ways we were to blame, or that, you know, like to say, Prevail cheese does not taste good to me. Like that, obviously, that's not a profound criticism of St. Louis. Yeah. I mean, it's like, well, okay, just don't eat it. But so, you know, it took us a while. It took us a while really to make friends, and then we did, and now we're very happy.
What were some of the other things that you were not crazy about? You just mentioned two relatively minor things.
Right. Well, I mean, I think we had moved from Philadelphia, and prior to that, we had lived in Washington, D.C. And so I think that at the risk of fulfilling stereotypes, like my husband and I, when we moved here, we were in our early 30s, we're both politically liberal, and, you know, it felt like we didn't have to make that much effort to meet people like us in other cities, like people who like to watch the same TV shows or like to go to the same kinds of movies or, you know, sort of, or who like to like have nerdy game nights and play, you know, whatever, Trivial Pursuit or something. And it felt a little bit harder. It felt like the proportions were not quite the same, that when we looked around, we didn't see people who seemed as much like us, which actually ultimately that's one of the reasons I like St. Louis. I mean, you don't want to be in this little bubble of being surrounded by people who only listen to the same music that you do and read the same magazines. But it just, you know, I think that politically it felt different. And it also happened that I was working on a book, a novel that was a fictional retelling of the life of Laura Bush. And I felt pretty skittish about telling people what I was doing, because I would never, I do feel like I'll stand by sort of this assessment of St. Louis, which is that I think that in any setting, whether it's a dinner party or, you know, just running into people in the post office, you never would assume that everyone is of the same political persuasion. And so I never knew how people would react. And it was a weird book. And it just felt like it was hard to explain. And I didn't want to be defined by, if I met someone, by having written this Laura Bush book.
You know, we have done programs here on how welcoming St. Louis is or isn't. And for the most part, people, transplants, have found the same kind of difficulty you have found, that it is very, very difficult to kind of step into the flow, if you will. You mentioned difficulty in making friends. I think in the Times piece, you also pointed out you threw a Super Bowl party to which no one came.
Well, actually, the really embarrassing part of that story, as if that part is not embarrassing enough, is that someone said to me after reading that piece, she said, well, we were at your Super Bowl party in 2008. And then I thought, oh, my God, it was our Oscar party that nobody came to. And then I thought, oh, no, is the New York Times going to have to run a correction? It'll be like the most humiliating correction in the history of the New York Times. It's like zero people came to this party, not that party. But yeah, I mean, I think that because for people who grew up here, you know, they might have family, they might have friends from high school or from college, or so it's almost like they don't need you, you being the outsider. And even though they might be potentially very friendly in passing and say, you know, we should get together, and then it never happens. And at this point, I mean, again, now for us, 6 years have passed, we have young children. Our lives feel busy. And so I think we're the kind of people who, you know, maybe my husband has new coworkers, and I think we should have them over. And then like 2 years pass and we still haven't done it. So I understand that, you know, people lead busy lives.
We've also had guests on this program who have returned home after a period of time living someplace else, and say they run into the same thing, that it's difficulty to reintegrate themselves back into their society.
Oh, that surprises me slightly, but you know, you never know.
Yeah. So, what was the moment? What was the epiphany when you went from we don't care for this place very much to we love it?
Well, it was gradual. I think that partly it had to do with having children. You know, actually, when we moved here, we were not even married, and we got married here. I delivered 2 children at St. Mary's. So a lot of big things in our lives have taken place in St. Louis. And I think that, you know, it was just this gradual feeling of like, oh, this is a restaurant that we like to go to and we've been to repeatedly. Or, you know, when our families come to town, this is what we do with them and this is what we show them. And the biggest reason we didn't like it was that we didn't have friends. And probably the biggest reason we do like now is that we do have friends. But in terms of one dramatic moment, this was only a year ago, but I was at a trivia night. And the Blues were in the playoffs. And there was this particular moment where, you know, the Blues scored and everyone in this school gym cheered. And I literally had this physical feeling like I was like, I've become a St. Louisan. Yeah. And, you know, which who knows if real St. Louisans would agree with that. But
I'm just looking at my notes here. And one of the quotes I took from that article was, becoming St. Louis is an involuntary process.
I mean, I don't think that you can really fake, at least to yourself, you can't fake belonging or not belong. You know, like you feel like you do or you feel like you don't. You're happy to be here or you wish you were somewhere else. And right now, I mean, we're really happy to be here, but it would not have taken much in our early years here to persuade me to relocate.
Yeah, we have a call already for someone who wants to get into this part of the conversation before we get to the book. And I'll explain to our audience, I'm avoiding somewhat talking about details of the book because I don't want to give it away. I mean, I was a real page-turner. I loved it, but I don't want to give it away so people have the same experience I did. But let's bring in Randy before we take our break. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi. I just wanted to make – I love Philadelphia, too. It's a great city, but – I wonder if any of your preconceived notions about St. Louis's political climate is mainly just based on stereotypes, considering the fact that in 2008, the city of St. Louis voted for Obama at a higher percentage than the city of Philadelphia. And it is a fact that the city of St. Louis is one of the bluest, most democratic voting jurisdictions in the United States. With a lot more registered Democrats per capita than the city of Philadelphia. So I was just wondering maybe if that is just like an unfounded stereotype that you were maybe, you know, it was self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, I mean, I think, I guess, obviously, I can't argue with the statistic. I mean, I think some of those numbers reflect the fact that the actual city of St. Louis is so small. I mean, sort of similar to like crime statistics about St. Louis, that they're a little bit skewed. But I will say, so when we moved here, we lived in Richmond Heights. And when we walked down the street, you definitely, in 2008, you definitely see McCain Palin signs, and you definitely see Obama signs. So, you know, Missouri is purple. Like, I don't dispute that the city of St. Louis is Democratic, and that delights me as a Democrat. Right. But I don't think you have to go, like, deep into the county to find plenty of Republicans. And also, the thing I should say is I'm now friends with Republicans. That was sort of a new experience in my adult. I'm not a Republican, but I'm friends with them.
That's quite an admission.
I know.
But we should point out, and I know Randy knows this, that in the last two elections, St. Louis might have gone Democratic, but the state of Missouri went Republican on both, both occasions.
Losing our bellwether status.
That is very, very true. Okay. Well, obviously, we've established the fact that you have become a St. Louisan over the past 6 or 7 years. I have referred to in the book Sisterland, the book we're talking about today, is the fact that St. Louis is itself a character in the book. Did you feel that was happening?
Well, as a reader, I really like to read books that have a strong, distinct setting. And so I felt very clear that I wanted this to be set in St. Louis, and I wanted it to be real St. Louis. I mean, I think that fiction writers are cut a lot of slack where it's like, those streets don't really intersect, but in my novel, it's fine if they do. Or like, that restaurant doesn't exist, but who cares? And I felt like, no, I want this to be real St. Louis. And, you know, if they're driving down Big Bend and then make a left on Clayton Road or something, it's like I want it to be the way that it really is. And I feel like St. Louis is a very interesting, almost like more interesting than it can seem at first glance, where there's such a sense of history, and there's tensions which aren't necessarily good for the city, but which make fiction really interesting. Like, I have sincerely had the thought that if I did nothing for the rest of my career but set novels in St. Louis, I would have plenty of material.
That is Curtis Sittenfeld, and she is the author of Sisterland, the book we're talking about today. It's a brand new book. It's getting a lot of attention. It's set in St. Louis, and it deals with the potential of an earthquake, something all of us here have probably thought about from time to time because of the New Madrid Fault and other faults that are in our general vicinity. We'll come back and continue the conversation. If you'd like to get into the conversation with Curtis, feel free to do so at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email if you like it, talk@stlpublicradio.com. And we will take a tweet at STL on air. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with author Curtis Sittenfeld, the author of Sisterland. That's her latest book. She has a number of bestsellers already to her credit, sold almost 2 million books. That's quite impressive, Curtis. 2 million books is a lot of books to sell. You know, I wanted to pick up on the point of using the reality of St. Louis and making sure that, you know, if you're driving on Big Bend and you take a right on such and such road, that you're basically accurate about that. How do you think that plays, or does it make any difference to people who aren't from St. Louis?
Well, I think that people appreciate a strong setting, even if it's not a setting that they're personally familiar with. And I also think, you know, there can just be this way of talking about a city where you live that resonates because it's the way that everyone thinks of their own city, even if the majority of readers of this book don't live in St. Louis. So I don't worry that much about confusing people who aren't from here. And then the other thing is, I mean, having written that New York Times piece, I feel like it turns out everyone in the world has a St. Louis connection. So I'm fine either way.
The 6 degrees of separation do in fact exist. Well, for St. Louisans reading the book, it certainly is a lot of fun to know exactly what you're talking about when someone makes a right turn from Clayton to Des Moines. It's, I know where that is. And the Caldies is right there and all the rest of it. Let's go back to the phones and then we'll continue talking about the book. I'm going to take another stab at Licia, who is a caller of some frequency. Go ahead, Licia. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Don. Hi, Curtis.
This is a breakthrough day.
Hi, Curtis. I whenever I listen to authors' interviews, two things I'm always intrigued about: their writing habits and their writing roots. I wanted to know if you, you know, came out with a pen in your hand. Like most authors say they do, but I don't know.
The short answer is probably yes, I did come out with a pen in my hand. I mean, as soon as I learned to read and write around the age of, I guess, 5 or so, I always did it. I loved to read. I always wrote stories, and I never outgrew it, which I think is really the main difference between me and a lot of other people. And so, you know, all during my childhood, my adolescence, and obviously it wasn't, you know, I was 29 years old when my first novel was published. I had already worked as a journalist at that point, but it wasn't like I always knew I would do it professionally, but it was always a big part of my life.
Interesting. Thank you.
Alicia, thanks so much for the call. In connection with what we were just talking about before she called, we have a tweet, I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly, Arendam is what it looks like, who says, "My wife just finished Sisterhood, a good read. I'm told the local references made it especially engaging." So I guess that settles that question.
Huh? Oh, good. Yeah, I've gotten the stamp of approval. Actually, it's funny because I did a lot of research, because the book is written from the point of view of twins who are from St. Louis, and because I'm not from St. Louis, I wanted it to seem convincing. And so they actually grow up in Kirkwood, and there's lots of flashbacks to their adolescence and their childhood. And then in adulthood, one lives in Rock Hill, and one, I never make this clear actually whether she lives in the city or in Clayton, but one of them lives kind of near Skinker, so like someone on the border. And I ended up, you know, I toured Knifer Middle School in Kirkwood. I toured Kirkwood High School. I wanted to get the details. I found this wonderful Kirkwood High graduate. I think she was a graduate of the class of maybe 95, and the twins are supposed to be from the class of 93. And so she loaned me her yearbooks, and she would answer all these questions I had. Like if I said, "Well, if you were going to a mall on the weekend, what mall?" And she would say, "Oh, the West County Mall." Or, you know, if you were going to get ice cream, and she would say, "Velvet Freeze." And even like, I think I knew I had gone too far when I was asking her about the bus routes and, like, if it left Knifer Middle School, you know, what street would this bus go to? And it seemed like, okay, probably no one besides me cares about this.
Many references to the Galleria, I noted. And I think the Schnucks people should probably have something for you in the mail, because Schnucks gets an awful lot of play in the book.
I know. It is. It's true. Schnucks, it's probably like most of the activity takes place at the character's house or at Schnucks. But, right. I mean, for a lot of us, it's that's true of our lives, too. A lot of life takes place at Schnucks.
Sure. You mentioned the two sisters. They are identical twins, and they have psychic abilities. Do you have a particular interest in that extrasensory perception?
Well, the funny thing is, the origins of this novel are actually in something that I think a lot of St. Louisans will remember, which is the prediction in December 1990 by Ibon Browning, the self-described climatologist, that there would be a huge earthquake in this area. And about a year after I moved here, a friend of mine who had grown up in Jefferson City told me about that. And I was just, there was something about it that was so intriguing and seemed like such a great premise for a novel. This idea of someone makes a prediction that there's going to be a huge earthquake. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. It's not really scientifically credible, and yet it taps into these human fears that we have and these anxieties. And as I started talking to people who had lived here, you know, they would say, "I took out earthquake insurance," or there's a woman I know who said, I would put running shoes in the trunk of my car." Or people, someone actually at a reading, someone said, "My mother and all her friends sent their china out of town," which I have to say, even if I had thought it would happen, even if I had lived here then, I don't have nice china, so I would never have done that. But so I, at the time when I first heard of this, I thought, instead of telling the story from the point of view of a climatologist, I'm going to tell it from the point of view, the person who makes the prediction will be a psychic, and the person who tells the story will be her sister, who's sort of close to her, embarrassed by the prediction, yet kind of implicated in the prediction. So it's like the psychicness in the story came out of the prediction rather than the prediction coming out of the psychicness.
Well, now you've got to tell people the real reason you wrote the book, as pointed out in the acknowledgments, which I was quite surprised to see. But let's blow our own horn a little bit, Don. Go ahead, Curtis.
This is completely true. So I had been – I started the book in 2009. And then in I guess it was, I think, early February 2011, you had a show, a St. Louis on the Air episode talking to two seismologists. One is Seth Stein at Northwestern. One is Michael Wiesession at Washington University. And they actually were talking about this idea that maybe the New Madrid fault line has essentially shut down. And it was... I had never heard that before. I thought they were both incredibly persuasive. And then you actually had another show, as I'm sure you remember, sort of rebutting their ideas. But I have to say, I was more convinced by their ideas than by the... And I really... Some of the ways that hearing that episode of St. Louis on the Air influenced the writing is that there is a... There's a seismologist, geophysicist professor at Wash U who's a character in the book. It's a woman named Courtney. And some of her... ideas about earthquakes or about the New Madrid seismic zone are like literally borderline lifted from that episode. Really? I know. Maybe instead of schnooks paying me, I should pay you. But yeah, it was very interesting to me to hear their ideas and this, because I also think that people in St. Louis seem reluctant to let go of the idea that the 1811, 1812 New Madrid earthquakes were like the biggest earthquakes ever, or that the fault line is still very active. Like somehow it seems insulting or disappointing that maybe that's no longer true, even though it also makes us all safer if it is true.
Well, it's still active, and every day there is a rumble, but it's of such magnitude that nobody really feels it anymore.
Right.
By the way, you've just enhanced your credibility incredibly by explaining to people that you listen to this program.
Of course.
What greater credentials could you want to have? There are a couple of other things about the book, and again, we don't want to give too much away. I'll tell you, I was really turning those pages to get to the determination as to what was predicted to happen would happen, and I'll just leave it at that. But one of the things I picked up on the book was the element of racism, which you handled quite delicately in a couple of different ways. One of the characters is black, and he takes the children, or I guess it was a single child, one of the children one of your sisters, out and is stopped by security people. Talk a little bit about that and how that idea kind of popped into your head.
Right. Well, so in the book, the story is told from the point of view of Kate, and she's white, her husband's white. Their best friends are an interracial couple where the woman is white and the man is black. And Kate and the man are basically best friends. They're both stay-at-home parents. And so Hank ends up, through sort of random circumstances, taking Kate's white child to the shopping mall, and they get stopped, as you're saying. And actually, it was interesting because I wrote that thinking that it was plausible. It wasn't really based on... Well, actually, maybe it was based on a little something that I'll mention in a second. But after I turned the book, after I finished the book, there was an incident recently at Walmart that was almost exactly what I'm describing, except with the races reversed, where it was a white father was with his mixed race children. And apparently other customers expressed concern. The family goes home, and I think the police met them at home. So it's like I know someone, a woman who's a real estate agent here, who said that she showed houses to a couple, an academic couple, where one of them was black, one of them was white, and they were thinking of moving from a coast. They were being recruited to a university here, and they ended up actually not moving here because they were concerned about perhaps, you know, St. Louis being more conservative racially than where they currently lived. So I think that, you know, since Obama's election, I think there's this idea, especially among white people, and I'm white, that we're post-racial, or like things are basically fine. And I personally think there's a lot of evidence to suggest otherwise.
I think a lot of people who have been here either a long time or have come more recently, such as you have, have called this city one of the most racially polarized in the country. I mean, it's not difficult to pick up on that in a lot of ways.
Right. And it does seem, I think it seems fairly segregated, too. Yeah, I mean, there are definitely, and again, sometimes getting back to that New York Times piece I wrote, like, certainly I recognize that if you want to talk about serious problems in St. Louis, it's not Prevail Cheese. It's things more like, you know, racial tensions or racial inequality.
I had a colleague that I worked with at one time in television days who was African-American, and he told stories that every time he went to a very well-known department store here in the city, he was followed throughout the store until he left because it was assumed that he was going to try to steal something.
Right,
and
right.
He's bitter to this day, and this is many years later because of that. A lot of folks have picked up on the early part of the conversation. We'll talk more about the book, but let's get back to the folks who want to get to talk to Curtis. Jim in St. John, go ahead.
Jim, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
It's the first time I've ever called in. I listen every day.
Great.
But anyway, we moved here in 83, my wife and I, and it was only supposed to be for 2 years. And we ran into the same thing. I mean, I didn't like it here at all. And I just could not wait to move back to California where we had moved here from. My wife said, well, give me 2 years out there. I have an opportunity to start a business. And it's worked out well for us. I'm a firefighter in the county. I've been doing that for 25 years. I love it. It has really worked out well for us. And I could relate to everything she said that right at first, I don't know that I like this place so much. Now our situation is I'm looking to retire, and I think we're probably going to stay in the St. Louis area, which to me, back in 1983, I would have thought absolutely impossible.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call.
Well, you know, it's funny because we actually, about a year ago, met a young couple where they had moved here for a year and it was unclear, like maybe they were going to stay longer, maybe they weren't. And I ran into, one part of the couple at Schnucks, of course. And he said, oh, actually, we're moving. And I felt this sense of sort of identification that I think that maybe St. Louis had not gotten its claws in them the way it did for my husband and me, because I think you really need like 18 months or 2 years, and then all at once things just kind of gel. But I felt that sense of like, oh, no, you have to give it more than a year. You know, of course, there are other reasons to, like, I think they were leaving for professional reasons, but it's like, I do think you just have to be a little bit patient and let the charms of the city reveal themselves and let the people embrace you.
I came here from the East Coast 42 years ago.
Yeah.
And still here.
Yeah,
no plans to move at the present time. Jim, thanks for the call. Steve in West County, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. So I moved here from Kansas in 89 after college, and what I found most interesting about St. Louis is the St. Louis question. And what I noticed about it was when they ask you where did you go to school, they're not asking where you went to college. They're asking where you went to high school. And I've always found that question to be very provincial in its whole approach. Have you encountered that, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess the truth is my husband and I are mostly friends with transplants like ourselves. And then some of our friends, one person is from St. Louis and then the spouse is from elsewhere. I guess we have one, what I think of as like a St. Louis on St. Louis couple that we're friends with. But it doesn't offend me. You know, people do feel a sense of pride here or a sense of, you know, being defined by having grown up here. And I think in most ways, I think that's like sort of a nice, sweet thing, and not, I don't see that as negative.
All right, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Let's bring in Stephanie. I think Stephanie's got a question you might find interesting. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon. I'm Miss Stephanie in St. Louis County. I formerly lived in St. Louis City. I departed from St. Louis when I was in the fifth grade and returned here in 1991. I was practically raised my second home in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I thought it was very interesting after divorcing, returning to St. Louis, having to fit back in. So my question was to individuals that I grew up with up until the age of fifth grade. And outside of that, it's like what neighborhood you grew up in. And I want to know if you had a second title for a book called Fitting Back In. I'm a military family. I have two boys. One was born in New Orleans, and one was born in Fairfield, North Carolina. And they had a very different perspective on fitting back into St. Louis because there were natives, other different states, opposite of where their mother was born. So it's pretty interesting for myself fitting back in and my two sons being from two other different states. And we were like, we're not, you know, we're going to get out of here because we see some things that we kind of disagree with, you know, by me deporting here when I was a child and returning as a young adult. It was pretty different.
Stephanie,
and I'm a hospitality professional, and being involved in hospitality has kind of changed some things, outlook for me.
I'm going to interrupt you, Stephanie. I have to take a break. I'll give Curtis a chance to decide if she wants to write that second book. Not a second book, but a sequel, if you will, fitting back. And we had actually talked about that a little while ago, that sometimes it's difficult to come back. That's what Thomas Wolfe said. You can't go home again.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think for people who I think it is also certainly possible that you go to school here and then you leave and you come back and you don't, it's not like you re-enter the life that you led before. I mean, maybe you know totally different people. Maybe you live in a different area of the city. So that's, I think that you're not, the caller is not alone in feeling the way she feels.
Sure. Let's take that break now. We need to take that time. We're talking with Curtis Sittenfeld. She's the author of the book Sisterland. That's what we're talking about in part, and also talking about the adjustment she had to make when she came to St. Louis about 6 years ago. But the adjustment is now complete, and she feels like she's right at home here in our community. Let's take that break now. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Curtis Sittenfeld, the author of Sisterland, a brand new book, and it deals with the possibility of an earthquake here in St. Louis and obviously is set in St. Louis, and we've been talking a lot about the transition she had to make and moving from Philadelphia to our community. I have a number of calls still and a number of emails, but one thing I want to be sure to get to is the fact you've got a couple of very steamy segments in your book.
Oh my.
I mean, I found them quite steamy, you know. I had to fan myself as I was reading them. Just wondering, you know, how difficult is it to write like that, write that kind of material in a book?
And by that kind of material, I think you mean sex scenes?
I do. I can't even say the word. I'm going to break out in a sweat.
Well, I mean, I definitely feel like, in a strange way, there's like a disconnection between me, you know, as a person who writes those scenes, and then like if someone said, could you read that out loud, I would be so embarrassed and I would blush deeply. But I do feel like sex is part of life, and in all of my books I like to go into very great detail about the characters' daily lives and, you know, the way they feel. And I think that for me, it's always been a little bit of a cop out to, like, you know, show them kissing and then you kind of jump ahead.
Fade to black.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that it can be, if there's a couple, you know, having a sexual encounter, it can be very revealing about, you know, who they are, how they perceive themselves, you know, what's the dynamic between them. You know, is it ratcheting up in this moment? You know, are they people who know each other well? Do they not know each other well? So I would say that I think there are, you know, reasons that have to do with the craft of storytelling to include those. But then I also understand that sometimes people can feel like, oh God, you know, like do I? I don't know. You know, that it can also make people feel kind of embarrassed to read them or discuss them.
Well, if it's gratuitous, it's one thing. It's another thing that in your particular case, it really helped shape the plot. I mean, it was really important for some of the plot points that
I would agree with.
Made.
I mean, although, of course, I think gratuitous is like a subjective assessment. And so, for example, with my own parents, I didn't do it with this book because of timing and I was basically too disorganized. But with my last book, American Wife, I made them their own special copy with all the sex scenes cut off. And like I definitely feel that even now My mother thinks that probably any sex scene is a gratuitous sex scene when written by her daughter.
Speaking of The American Wife, that loosely based on Laura Bush, as I think is well known. Did you get any feedback from the Bush family about that?
I did not get any feedback from the Bush. I mean, I think they're pretty accustomed to being in the public eye, and I think that, you know, and even in pop culture in terms of like Will Ferrell depicting George W. Bush. So I don't, you know, I feel like I sort of heard third or seventh hand accounts of maybe distant Bush family members reading it. But like certainly no one ever said anything to me, contacted me. And I wouldn't really expect that to have happened.
You're never worried about that sort of thing.
Well, worried from what point? I mean, I think that, again, because it wasn't unprecedented for the Bushes to be in pop culture. You know, like there was like a cable show, Lil Bush. So I didn't I understood that maybe that book would not be everybody's cup of tea. But you know, it seemed like my publisher was OK publishing it.
I'd only worry about Barbara Bush.
She can
be tough when her family is under certain kinds of scrutiny. We have an email here from Becky in Clayton. It says, did you worry about earthquakes before writing the book? And did writing the book and researching it cause you to worry more or less about a potential event and its impact on your family?
Actually, it's an interesting question because I'm somewhat of an anxiety-ridden person, and I actually, writing the book made me worry less about earthquakes. I worry less now than I did when I started the book in 2009, partly having heard that episode of St. Louis on the Air with those seismologists. I felt like they made a very convincing case for the fact that the New Madrid fault is not that active or not as active as it once was.
Well, we know you're a St. Louisan now and a Missourian now because you're not calling it New Madrid.
I know. Right? Well, that was actually – there are two friends I have who are women who grew up in St. Louis. They both moved away, and then they actually both are law professors at Wash U. And they read the book to kind of – vet it for, like, do I say things that a St. Louis native wouldn't say? And so, for example, one of the things was I referred to Highway 64, and they said you would never call it. You would say Highway 40 if you're from St. Louis. And so, of course, I made that change. But yeah, there can be those little giveaways where, or I had this moment of feeling like I am a St. Louisan. When I met someone who's actually a friend of Jonathan Franzen. I met this person in New York, and I was saying to him, well, my story, you know, my characters are from Kirkwood, which is totally different from Webster Groves, and like that's, you know, that's, there's like this major distinction, and I thought that's only actually a distinction that a St. Louisan would make, and so, again, I felt like I am a St. Louisan.
He's doing pretty well. A local boy makes good.
He is doing pretty well, yeah. I'm not too worried about his career.
No, nor are any of us. An email here from Matt saying, I'm just curious, with young children, how can you possibly find the time to write these great books? It must take years to write, and being a mother takes so much time of its own.
Well, it's funny because people ask that question, and I think that if I were like a teacher or a lawyer or something, people probably wouldn't ask that question because they would assume that I have childcare, which as a writer, I do have childcare. So, you know, I'm really lucky that I have a much more flexible schedule than a lot of working mothers. I work at home so I can, you know, often have lunch with my 2-year-old or things like that. But I have a babysitter who comes during the day. And so I'm never in the same room writing with my children. Like I'm never, it's not like I'm sitting on my laptop typing while they're playing with their animals.
Well, it's very clear in the book, as if people don't know already, how time-consuming and children take, because Kate has 2 children, and that's her life.
Right, right. And there are definitely a lot of details about having young children in the book. I mean, something I felt strongly about was that I wanted those details to be in the service of the story, and I didn't want them to be like me using my novel as a vehicle for telling like cute and wacky stories about my own children. I mean, it's not, all of my novels are sort of interpreted as being autobiographical, which they're not. But again, it's like obviously motherhood is still relatively new to me, and I felt that it was a worthy subject for.
Well, most writers, if not all of them, do have to draw to a certain degree from personal experience. Otherwise, how could they write?
Right, right. I think it's always a mix, and that the proportions are different for different writers.
Sure. Let's take another call. Catherine is joining us. Catherine, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Curtis.
Thanks very much. It sounds like a wonderful book, and I will be going to West Bank Books.
Excellent.
To purchase my copy. But I did want to share on the earthquake story. My dear friend, Paula Nicolette, who was a social worker in Highland, Illinois, as the earthquake, date was approaching, she offered to take me and my mother in, as well as our cats. And so we all arrived in Highland, and my mom and her cat had a bedroom, and my cat was housed in the garage with a little warming pad, and that's coming at night. And we spent 3 days there until we were sure that, all danger had passed, which was pretty insane because whatever. But anyway, and the other piece I wanted to add was I love that, life is happening in Schnucks. And oddly enough, I now work at Schnucks. So I can tell you that if you want like fertile ground, come to Schnucks Loughborough, 55 in Loughborough.
I know. I've actually, the funny thing is, somehow at one point, this might be more information than anyone needs, but my daughter, my 4-year-old needed to use the bathroom at Schnucks, and they were cleaning the one that was downstairs. And so we went up in the employee sort of locker room lounge, and I did think, ooh, I'm getting the inside view on life at Schnucks.
Well, I don't know if you know Nene Harris, is a full historian. And I'm sure that if you want to work on some good South City locales, come to Loughborough. I'll hook you up.
Thank you.
And I look forward to any number of news stories from you. And I will also go back in your archives. And Don, I love seeing you at the birthday bash. Me and Pooley were there. Oh, she's sitting up now. So.
All right. Well, give that.
Okay, let's go. Take care.
Pet the dog. Go pet. Thank you so much for the call. Our time is beginning to wind down. I know you're going to be involved with the Ready Reader Association here in St. Louis. Give us an idea of what that's all about in about a minute or so, if you would.
So Ready Readers helps get books into the hands of kids living in low-income neighborhoods, and then it also matches people up, sort of volunteer readers to make books part of their lives. And I'm partnering with them doing a raffle where people can buy raffle tickets, and if they win, I will visit their book club to talk about Sisterland or any of my other books. And all the raffle proceeds go to Ready Readers, which is a great organization.
We'll direct people toward the Ready Reader website where they can get more information on that. That's going to be taking place relatively soon.
Oh, yeah. I think the information is already up on their website, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Well, Curtis Sittenfeld, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I enjoyed your book immensely and would heartily recommend it. And as we said earlier on, I think on the air, perhaps off, that this is a great book for this time of year, for people to take to the beach or any place else where they want to spend a little time, relax, and read a good book.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. The book, once again, is Sisterland, and the author is Curtis Sittenfeld. Thank you.